Okay, what I'll be talking about is the Effective Learning Design Project, and this is actually our second year in. So some of you may have seen a presentation that was in the early stages last year, and I would have really liked to show you something good today, but at a workshop yesterday, James did something very unfortunate, and so it's not quite as complete now as we thought it was. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with the project, the purpose of the project was to create a highly scaffolded but flexible learning activity planning tool, which has morphed into the LAMS activity planner that some of you may already be familiar with. And the original plan, and this is how the proposal was written up, was it was designed to help academic staff, that is university people, understand the rationale for using best case exemplar learning designs and to guide practitioners through the learning design process. And a lot of school teachers don't realise, but you do not have to have any teaching qualifications whatsoever to teach in university. That is slightly changing, so it's not completely true of all universities at the moment, but it does mean we have a lot of people out there who've had no teacher training. Now, I think we're pretty lucky because a lot of lecturers are actually naturally gifted teachers, and that seems to be why they do it. But there is also a number of lecturers out there who would like to be gifted, who would like to really engage their students, but they truly wouldn't know the first... just don't know where to start. So that was our original plan, to develop something so those people would have some idea of what teaching was. And so we could develop some really nice lessons for them, they could put their content in, and then at least they'd have something. So that was the plan. We thought we'd have 20 exemplar learning designs, and actually yesterday we were pretty well on the way to that. But we might have to do a bit of repair before then now. And we also were aiming to develop a community of educational developers and academic staff that were looking at learning design and looking at putting up resources so that they might be shared. And I think as an ex-teacher, the one thing that really bothered me was the number of reinvention of the wheel. We are now moving towards a national curriculum, which means at any moment hundreds of people will actually be teaching the same thing. And you always have to really invent yourself the first time, and it's quite difficult. So when I taught pre-service teachers, they started with this blank slate and they had nothing to work with. So something like this would have really helped them, even if the content was in it. So that's what the plan was. So we had to firstly establish what it was that people wanted. And if you were at the conference last year, this is where we were talking to you about, okay, what does it need to be? Do we need to build a whole course so that we have this big overview picture? Or are we looking at something more granular? And it's been interesting because Diana Lorillard, who some of you may know, was here last year, and she decided to take this big overview approach. So she is looking at designing whole courses in a similar sort of approach to what we're talking about here. Then you went right down to the other level, which was just a lesson facilitator. So you wanted to deliver a lesson and you needed some help, so you went to some tool that would help you design a lesson. Or an activity planner, which could even be smaller than a lesson, just doing one thing. And then we looked at whether it should be an educational tool. That is, by putting all your content in, should the wording be in such a way that you're actually teaching the person who's putting the content in what they're doing and the purpose of what it was? And the last one is just a shortcut to get them there really quick. And James calls that the down and dirty type approach. They don't care really why we're doing it. It works, so they're just going to put their content in and away they're going to go. So this is all the options that we had. And as it turned out, we ended up with something that was a bit of a combination of all of them. And why it came about, the whole project, was because of this huge responsibility that academic staff have, primarily to research, and that teaching is not highly regarded in a lot of universities. It's the second thing you have to do to bring the money in, but the real money and the real prestige is in your research output. And when Diana was here, she did talk about how that there is this assumption that you get your PhD in physics and magically you can teach first year physics. It just somehow magically happens. And in her experience, it seriously doesn't magically happen. So that's what we were looking at. And there was a survey done in Australia and the UK, Gibbs did in 2003, and he actually looked at a lot of lecturers, most of them who didn't have training, and he came to the conclusion that they were actually, it was almost good luck that there were good lecturers out there. They were just basically gifted amateurs rather than people who were professionally looking at what they were doing. And at our university, Macquarie, I'm with Macquarie University, we did do a session on assessment, and we were going to develop a university-wide assessment policy. And as an ex-teacher, an ex-school teacher, I didn't really see what the problem was. But it's really interesting when you start talking to people who've had no training at all and that there might be some form of assessment other than an exam, that there are other ways to assess whether students know anything. And it was really interesting in particular faculties how they have a rule in every course that there must be, and it was up to 80% final exam. So it was quite interesting, the different approach. So the initial thought that I had when we looked at this was we wanted to develop this scaffold to create a runnable lesson. That is, if they're going to go to the trouble of developing this, at the end of it, at least they can push a button and it will run. They don't necessarily have to do it online, but if they wanted to, they could. And I wanted to provide all the things that an experienced teacher just naturally does. So I wanted to give advice to those people who hadn't ever done it before and to sort of explain what it was you were doing. As it turns out, that's probably the one feature people use least. So I'm going to now go into the planner. For those of you who've used LAMS, you probably recognise the interface to a certain degree. Okay, so this is the normal LAMS interface, but we have another blue tab up here, and that's the planner tab. So if we click on the planner, doesn't that look sad? There's only two little things here now.
Yes.
So the idea... At least we had witnesses. Something did happen yesterday. Okay, so what was there? And I'll show you a screenshot, luckily I have one, was a list of different ways of getting into these scaffolds that we've created. And so I'll show you one here called Introducing New Ideas. So if you're a teacher or a lecturer and you just think you want to try something new, then this is a resource for you so that there is a list of things there. And I'll use Brahmins, I assume. It's yours, is it? Or Scientific method in medicine. And so it's a LAMS sequence already developed, basically, in its most basic format. And what we discovered when we were looking at these teaching methods was there's a lot of teaching strategies out there that are very similar. So the pattern fits quite consistently. So there were things like problem-based learning, and although the nature of problem-based learning can be quite different, there is, when you look at all the research, a reasonable regularity of certain things occurring at certain times. So we could get a process, and so LAMS was pretty good at documenting the process. So we started pulling out other learning strategies that we could do this with. And, I mean, people can stand around and argue all day whether what we picked was acceptable, but at least it was a starting point. So in this particular example, we put together some new ideas, things that people were just experimenting with. And so that's that particular one. So what you end up having when it comes up is the LAMS sequence moves down to the left-hand side. So it's in a column down the side. So this was, the actual sequence was designed there. And this allows somebody to put their own content in. So we can have patterns of learning. And they can say, yes, I like that form, I like that strategy for teaching, and I could do that. And here it tells you what's required. So the LAMB sequence has been built, it's in the structure of a particular type, and all you have to do is put in your content according to the instructions, press a button at the end, and you'll then have a lesson in that particular strategy. The one thing that we were pretty keen to do is to be able then to edit it. I think that we were really conscious of this sausage factory mentality, that if everybody does the same lesson, or some school might import this and say, okay, now everyone has to start using this. And if it was all locked up, it really wouldn't be very successful. And I think anybody who's taught in a classroom will know that every single class is different, and there's always something that you need to do differently. So you put all your text in, and you have the option of opening it in full author, and then it is just like LAMB's authoring. So you can edit, move things around, take things away. There's no problem about that at all. Or you could just simply save it as a sequence. And once you've saved that as a sequence, it looks exactly the same as all the other LAMB sequences that you would have ever created. So what it was just a way of working people through, filling out a form, and at the end of it, they had a lesson in the format that we described. Okay, I'm going to close the editor now. And go back to PowerPoint. And show you what it looked like before. Okay, and so the first thing there is teaching strategies, and that's the area that I spent most time working on, and the one that's now gone. Teaching for specific purposes. That's what we thought. Topic-based activities, so some activities with content put in it. And so on. So you get this idea of what we were doing. So we just went through all the educational literature and tried to find things that fitted. Now, clearly, teaching is a really spontaneous, innovative thing. So there's lots of teaching strategies that don't fit the pattern. But we were surprised, when you get down to it, how many actually did work very well in this format. So here's some of them. Look at them all. Exploring alternative perspectives if you're trying to introduce your class to quite different things. So the LAMB sequence is all there ready to go. You just upload the resources and the text. Problem-based learning's there. Project case study. Predict, observe, explain. Who's heard of predict, observe, explain? Sue McNamara, put your hand up. You wrote part of this. I've got a screenshot of that. That's quite a neat little system I'll show you in a minute. Role play, that's becoming really popular, and a lot of lecturers want to give it a go but don't know the first thing to do, like what's the first step. Web quests, they've been around forever. Lots of people know they exist. They still work really, really well, but again, a lot of people don't know the first step. And the one above it, web dilemmas. Has anyone come across web dilemmas? Yeah. I'm a bit of a fan of web dilemmas, mainly because in the reality of schools, you don't get much computer time in the computer room. And so it's like a web quest, but much more concise, and you get two cases, usually the for and against, and the kids have to research it and away it goes. But again, if you haven't come across it before, you don't know really where to start. So the idea of this part of the planner is, firstly, we thought was for those innovative people who want to try something new but don't know anyone who's currently using it, or that person doesn't have time to show them. So the predict, observe, explain example that I happen to have screenshots of, which is now an archive piece, really, looks at a particular scientific strategy. So predict, observe, explain. When we first did this, what we did was we had an explanation there, fairly brief. You'll see it's just four brief paragraphs just explaining to someone what it's about. Originally, we went off and we did great creeds, and there were pages and pages of references, and we very quickly discovered that people are so not interested. They can Google it if they're that interested, but what they wanted to know is just how it would work for them in the classroom. So we now have distilled it down to about four short paragraphs. And then we included a generic template, which is the basic structure of what we're trying to do, and no text in it. So then the person just comes and puts the text in. The problem was that nobody understood that. It was really hard to work out what was going on. So then afterwards we went back and we put examples in. So in each one follows this pattern. That is that there is now a live example with text in it. It may be nothing to do with content-wise with what you're doing, but it is a concrete example so you can see how it works. And then the generic one is there. Past tense, please. They all did that. Okay, so this was the hammer and feather experiment that they did on the moon. Is everyone familiar with that? They held a hammer and a feather and dropped it. And so this follows the pattern of the predict, observe, explain. So the scenario here has been is being explained. So you can see how this is quite clearly a LAM sequence. This is the first information piece setting up the scenario. And then the students have to predict what they think will happen, and it does show them that there is going to be a hammer and a feather, and that the astronaut in the video lets it go. And then they predict in this, which is effectively a vote, what the result is going to be. And this really cute feature of predict, observe, explain, you get a commitment from them. Okay, you're absolutely positive that that's the answer, or you're just making a guess or whatever. And they can share that with the group if they want. And then they have to explain why they think that. That's the video. So they actually then watch what happened. And this bit at the bottom wasn't originally there. We got them to watch it, and then they had to explain whether what they watched was what they predicted or not. We then discovered that they don't see what you think they're seeing. So we had to include this bit, describe your observations, so that we could work out when they didn't get the answer we expected, what they thought they were actually seeing. Okay, so then they've got to explain the differences. And this is what it looks like. Oh, go back. This is what it looks like when you put it all together. And if you want to look at it, oh, you could have looked at it in the planner. We will build it again. But as you put your content in, you'll see you get this little editing advice at the side here. If you wish to change the example, you can. So this is a specific planner with that content, the hammer and feather in it, that you can edit, or alternatively you can get a completely blank one and put your own in. And in the blank one, this editing advice tells you, right, in this particular box, you describe this scenario, you provide a video or whatever. So that's the way it's designed. Okay, so why are so many teams working on planners now? At the moment, at our last count, we had a meeting and there was 8 different groups in the world working on something like this. And it generally. And it's really been interesting how we've all come at it almost from exactly the same reason, but gone at it very, very different ways. So Oxford University have a planner that looks at this huge big picture type approach. And we're the only ones that are sort of down at the real activity level. So the reason that everybody around the world has, well, everybody around the world, those people are doing this from around the world is basically because they've all come to the same conclusion and they've got the same problem. Larger class sizes, they've now got people in their class they wouldn't have had 20 years ago, whereas university education was once just teaching to the elite. Now suddenly you've got these people with different abilities in the room that some of them really don't want to be there. They're just there for the bit of paper. Some of them have access issues, and there's a range of cultural backgrounds, and so they react differently. And so it's forcing lecturers to rethink what they do. So standing and talking at people is not working. Whereas once upon a time you could get away with it because you were just dealing with the cream, now you do have to do things a little bit differently. But maybe that was always the case. So at this stage, what I'd like in the next probably 6 or 7 minutes is whether anybody has any ideas for a learning strategy that they know that might be useful for us to build, and whether you'd be interested in looking at the planner and developing a planner of your own. So at the moment, we develop the sequence and then we turn it into a planner, if you like. Whether giving people out there that facility would be of any use, whether people think that there is any value in you being able to do that so that you could pass it on to your own teachers or whatever. So in these few minutes, hopefully, we can get some more advice and give our boys some more work to do. So has anyone got any suggestions, comments? I understand it's after lunch.
The thing that motivates me the most about this and we start to me is the idea that when I'm developing content with my clinical staff, that whilst they probably won't engage if it's a template that I've done, you know, in that very structured design, if I can have a talk to them first about the sorts of activities they want to do and then quickly create an activity planner for them, then when they come to put their content in, it's a really easy interface. They don't have to double-click on anything. They don't have to negotiate advanced tools or anything like that. They can just pop their stuff in and I can give them guidance. So it's actually one step forward in terms of the plan, and like it's something that will be very specific to what I'm trying to teach. But when you're engaging other people who want to, you need them to put in content. Mm.
Bronwyn's at the University of University of Western Sydney at the School of Medicine, and they've got they've been given this sort of planet style tool and they've developed that. So you might like to have a look at that if you're interested in this.
Can I just question this terminology? You're talking about planet. Is that a template?
Oh, yes, sorry. In a broad terms, a generic template is like just a pattern of learning design itself. When we're talking about the planner, we're actually usually talking about this tool itself. Yeah, so there's two quite, it's quite different. That's right. You wanted to be able to edit our tool so that they create their own scaffolding with all the details like that. So there are, yes, your own tool itself that will allow you not just to put the content in, which is where we are at the moment, but to give you the ability to actually design the planner itself so that you can hand it on to other academics, if you like, and they can put content in. So you be the one that designs the teaching strategy and build it rather than get us to build it for you. Yeah, that is a bit of a problem, as we have seen. yes, absolutely.
I'd like to unpack role-playing, okay? Because role-playing and scenario-based learning are different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I've been waiting for a long time today, I've been watching the branching and sort of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
A lot of branching, a lot of choices. Mm-hmm. Some end up with very serious consequences. They learn all through the mistakes.
Yep, sure.
Role play is where you give them the freedom to be a farmer.
Mm. It's interesting because we've got one guy at the moment who's training pilots.
Yes.
And he's using role play. And role play, because pilots are very fixated with what their job is. But they don't ever consider their actions in relation to other people's actions. And apparently in the airline world, there is so many other things they have to consider, the engineers and whatever. So he's developed a role play in LAMS that they do then. This is the scenario. Now, if you do this from different perspectives, look at the different issues that arise.
Scenario-based learning experience is where you present a problem or
yes.
a scenario, and then they make the choices.
Mm-hmm.
There's consequences and feedbacks, and then that's the experience. Now, that's a subset in a role play.
Yeah, it's sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure type thing where you keep making choices and you continue to go off.
They could all be farmers. You'd be a farmer and I'll be, and we're playing roles. we've got a freedom, but then we strike a critical thing, we have to go through a scenario.
Yeah.
Is that what that does?
Yes and no, but I can see where we could have a number of options in there, and yes. Oh, feel free, yeah. Yeah, we've got the ALTC role play people who we're trying to get interested in that too, because they've got the capability. Yeah. Okay, I'm nearly out of time. Is there anyone else with any comments at the last minute? Yeah. You mean the actual teaching and learning strategies that we've used, or the actual designs? Yeah, the designs have been up for quite a while. Most of them are located on the LAMS community, interesting enough. Yeah, we've written quite a few papers, actually. Not specifically, but I see what you mean. We could write a paper on justification. I had when we were researching them, I had them all attached, all the research papers attached to the planner, but it made it very big and nobody read it, so we just whipped them all out.